very large number of people, but if we don't do that, and if we wait for 10 minutes, you know, it will be totally impossible to have all the, to give 20 minutes to each speaker, because we still have three presentations, and then it would be nice to have at least 10 minutes for not really a discussion, we don't have enough time, but something like a very brief exchange about the key element which seemed to which should be presented during the session of tomorrow and the general presentation of all these parallel sessions. So I'll give the floor to Olivier Petit for a presentation on the Saïs region in Morocco.
Okay, thank you, Jean. So, first of all, I would like to apologize since I was supposed to present yesterday. I was with my master's student at the University of Artois to have an exchange on entrepreneurship and sustainable development. And entrepreneurship is precisely the topic of my talk today. So I've been involved during the last 4 years in the Groundwater Arena project, and this presentation is based on field works which have been done by Valère Martin and Claire Papin-Stamos, and we have worked on this paper with Marcel Cuper and Fatah Hammer. So I will try to keep and to be on time. So the presentation outline is the following. I will first have a brief introduction and present the analytical framework. Then in a second step, I will present the analysis of the entrepreneurial logics and practices of family farmers in the Saïs. It's one of the regions which was mentioned in Kevin's presentation just before the coffee break. And then a short discussion and conclusion. So we have started our work about entrepreneurship based on the book of Yandou van der Ploeg, published in 2009, on new peasantries. And in this book, van der Ploeg is defining three different modes of farming. Typically, the capitalist mode of farming, the entrepreneurial mode of farming, and the peasant mode of farming. In the Saïs, because we have only small farms, I will present in a few minutes the study area, we will mainly base our analysis on entrepreneurial and peasant modes of farming. And as it is shown in this figure, you can see that van der Ploeg, since the beginning, tried to understand the hybridizations of modes of farming. Of course, it's really important when you have an agriculture based on groundwater for irrigation. So first, we have tried to distinguish between logics and practices in this mode of farming. We define practices as they describe how farmers act and how a mode of farming is concretely implemented, whereas logics refer to the strategy and organization of the mode of farming. So if we look now how entrepreneurial and peasant logics and practices, we can say that the entrepreneurial practices aim at developing processes of production and commercialization more or less connected to the market. This is precisely what you can see on this figure from van der Ploeg with this large food processing industries and supermarkets. They are generating an added value which will enable to expand the investment and capitalization capacities. And these practices are also based on an increased use of wage labor force and on a strong investment in technologies. So they are based on a dependence on market for input provision, such as pesticides, fertilizers, or seeds, on productive resources, such as water and land, and on credit financial means. The entrepreneurial logics are grounded on a will to generate higher profits so as to develop, expand, and intensify food production. Subsidence food production agriculture is not considered as a satisfactory end, and attachment to land is weak, for instance, compared to the peasant logics. Land is much more considered as an input whose profitability must be maximized, and this way of thinking is, of course, intrinsically linked to a short-term horizon. And finally, the entrepreneurial logics are based on an organization of the farm developed on a shareholder basis or according to a hierarchical logic, in all cases outside of the family sphere. So the way we have addressed entrepreneurial practices and logics and peasant practices and logics is really according to Max Weber's ideal types. This is a way to not to describe reality, but to have concepts and elements which will help us in a second step to understand reality. In contrast, peasant practices are based on loose ties with the market economy and concerning the employment of workforce, mainly family workforce. The use of inputs, they use mostly natural fertilizer coming from all livestock, and no bank loans contract, but most of the time informal credits are accepted. Concerning the logics, peasant logics, we can characterize them by a mode of development aiming at subsidence food production agriculture or turn towards the acquisition of comfort. The second characteristic is the idea that the added value generated by agricultural production is intended neither to fund the expansion of the farm nor the degradation of the productive resources such as water or land. And these logics are based on the idea of land transfer toward future generations. Thus, to summarize these logics, we can say that the organization is primarily turned towards the family. So with this analytical framework in mind, we have developed an empirical study which was conducted in 2013 between April and June, and 2014 between April and June by Claire Papin-Stamos and Valère Martin. And this empirical study was conducted in two agrarian reform cooperatives, which are located in the Saïs Plain between Fès and Meknès. We talk about cooperative farms, cooperative structures, but in fact, in reality, today, they don't really act as a cooperative. It was ancient cooperative inherited from the French and then managed by the Moroccan state. And recently, farmers could obtain private property over land. So you have a lot of different elements to take in consideration. So we have tried to analyze the factor explaining the emergence of entrepreneurial agricultural practices, but we contrast this trend by showing the persistence and resurgence of peasant practices. So the case study is based on two agrarian cooperatives, Ezara and Ikda, which are very close, as you can see. On this map, and thanks Fatah for this map, on this map you can see different status in each cooperative. In the center, you have a public-private partnership, but you can locate the tub wells in red, so you can see the importance of groundwater, the wells in black, and three different status, the assignees, which are the farmers who were originally in the cooperative. They don't occupy so much surface area, but you have also land purchasers, mainly coming from the town. They are private investors, and most of the time, they are also people coming from the world of civil servants. And you also have lessees, for short-term contracts. Based on the on this study, we have tried to understand the emergence of entrepreneurial practices, and we have focused mainly on five factors. I don't have the time to develop each of these elements. But for instance, concerning the financial factors, it's clear that entrepreneurs require credit, whereas family farmers who are developing their activities in a peasant mode of farming are really reluctant to have a bank credit. The second factor, or series of factors, is linked with the functioning of the farm, concerning the rotation of the crops, the use of inputs such as workforce, and as I already mentioned, for instance, for the workforce, family farmers who are developing mainly their activity in a peasant mode of farming are only using family workforce. Third, the factors linked to the excess of water resources and especially to groundwater, and as you can see on the previous slide, you have even assignees who have tub wells, but the deep of the tub wells is different if you look at the status of the farmers. Then the fourth factor is about the commercial practices adopted by farmers, and we can see that you have the length of the distance to the market is really shorter for family farmers compared to investors and to lessees. And finally, the informational factors. It's clear that investors who are most of the time in town have the access to information compared to the small farmer who are working in their fields. The logics of farmer deal basically with the logic of capital use, different relationship to land, and as I already said, family farmers are really reluctant to sell their lands because they, okay? The capacity to expand the size of the farm, entrepreneurs and investors are really willing to develop the size of their farm compared to family farmers, and finally, the farm organization, mainly based on the family for small farmers compared to entrepreneurial or capitalistic modes of farming. So, as a conclusion and points of discussions, we have, and you can have access to the wallpaper on the conference website. We have identified the idea that the porosity of the walls, which is idealized in our presentation, because, as I said, we are using this idea of an ideal type, according to Weber, is the main lesson we can draw from this study. What happens in reality is a subtle process of hybridization between the peasant and the entrepreneurial modes of farming with a wide range of profiles, ranging from a full entrepreneur to a full peasant, and in between you have all the possibilities of connections. The other lesson we can draw from this study is that the figure of the entrepreneur, who is idealized, for instance, in the Green Morocco Plan of 2008, seems to operate as a powerful and strange magnet to small farmers, especially to young men who continue to develop their activities in a structure and organizational mode of farming inherited from their ancestors. But they try, on trial and error basis, to progressively integrate the knowledge, the techniques, the innovation developed in the entrepreneurial mode of farming. So, ready to conclude, if we focus on the political discourse in the field of agriculture, the trend in the development of new modes of farming seems inescapable from a peasant to an entrepreneurial and then to a capitalistic mode of farming. But our study stresses the persistence and resistance of practices and logics of ancestral mode of farming, which can mix with a modern vision of agriculture. But as we have witnessed in these two cooperatives, in several cases, the siren songs of entrepreneurship can lead to bankruptcy and exit from agriculture. In some cases, it's more a success, of course, but this kind of situation could also have a strong impact on the social cohesion of the Moroccan society, and particularly in rural areas such as this area in the Saïs. Okay, so thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Olivier. Well, some questions. Well, obviously, this was not really directed, addressing the question of underground war, but it was showing that we cannot speak of farmer in general, because there are at least three different types of farming systems in this small region of Morocco. And I think this may be true also in other parts of the world. If there is no question, maybe we can move to the next speaker, Daniel Leclerc. Okay. It's on the Marais Poitevin, part of France.
Hello. My name is Daniel Leperc. I work in CSCG in south of France, and I want to present our work on groundwater management in the Marais Poitevin wetland. I want to apologize for my English. I want to present it in French, but I try to do it in English. I do my best. The Marais Poitevin wetland situation is based on two coexisting systems. A wonderful wetland area with a very strong environmental issue, and a performant irrigated agriculture system with a very overused groundwater for irrigation. The problem of the overused groundwater is the risk of flow inversion. When the groundwater level is too low, the wetland water come inside the groundwater, and you have this sort of river with a boat on it, but not very useful. And we measure the gap between the two areas. I think yes, that's right. And you can have in 2005, you can have a very deep gap between the two level. The project is then to prevent flow inversion that will have dramatic environmental consequences. The wetland is developed from 18th century. I want just to put some dates important. 1960, the last polder made near the sea, and 1919, the reclamation by overexploitation of groundwater. In 1919, the groundwater level was so low that the salt came, because we are very near the sea. Everybody says, how? We have a problem. In 2000, we began to develop infrastructure that we see next. The project is to build 25 reservoirs to save 50% of water. You have three areas. The first one, near the river Otis, who began in 2007, and this year we began, this one is the Vendée River, and this one is the Lay River. Here this is the sea, the ocean, Atlantic Ocean. You have to understand that if we save 50% of water, it means that 50% of withdrawal are in the reservoirs, and the other 50% are taking the groundwater and surface water. And you have to manage both of them. Okay. We have a technical result, very, very important, but it's not enough. Here you see the groundwater level minimum in 2005. It's near zero, and we have a minimum at 2.5. The gain is about 3 meters. If the groundwater level crosses the red line, all of the irrigation is stopped. Okay, the management is very important to provide not crossing the line, the red line. Okay, it's a very fast refill groundwater. The recharge is very quick. You have here the effect of summer rain, about 30 millimeters, and you have this refill of half a meter. So the recharge is very fast, and the discharge is very fast too. You have to be very fast for your decisions, because time is really short. You can see what we do in 2011. After a very dry sprint, we have to manage to have the groundwater level on the orange line, because we don't want to cross the red line, and that's a result of our decisions. Here you have the first rain. And you see the effect of the rain here, there. It's very quick. Yeah? Okay? We have to prove that our system don't impact negatively the groundwater on winter. Because we pump in winter to recharge the reservoirs. And we have an effect about 10 centimeters around the pumping, and we accept to lose 10 centimeters in winter to win 3 meters in summer. Because of the rules, who needs to keep a very high level of groundwater in summer, we have to manage water pollution, we have to manage withdrawal, and we have to restrict them. The system is everybody pays the same price and everybody has the same rules. If we need to have restriction because of the groundwater level, even people who have a groundwater prelevement withdrawal and a reservoir withdrawal are restricted the same. And we control, we manage and monitoring all of that. You have here the result with the over exploitation of volume, very low. And this is because we try to monitoring very closely all the withdrawal, and with a decision taken consultation every week. We think there is no good management without control. And control is very new in this area, but very important to know what we do. Okay? This graphic is very important because we try to compare what's happened in an area with about 10 years of this system and a new area we began this year. The management is based on a 2 weeks volume or 2 weeks attribution. Each point is for 2 weeks, and the area complete is 100% of your right, your water rights. Okay, and you see that people, farmers who have used to work with us trust the system and can have a different repartition of water in the summer, and there is only 2% here there, but it is very important for the groundwater level. And you know, technology is very fast to be in place, but compartment with individual attitude. Behavior. It's very long to modify. Okay. What we think it's important, it's when you have a collective measure, you have to have an efficient. You have to see if your measure it's social acceptability for the farmers, but even citizen acceptability, because we have a very environmental issue, very strong. Next, what can we progress? How can we progress? We have a lot of technical idea to progress in this management, but the problem is the current administrative limit. You can't do everything you want. You can't experiment everything. It's very difficult to improve a new system. You have to. Everybody have to trust you if you want to improve a new system, and it's one of our difficulties. To conclude, next step, I will focus the conclusion on a new ultrasonic flow meters with a daily data automatic send by the object on a wireless network. You can see this material on our stand here, and we began to improve this system. We have groundwater level every day, and we need withdrawal data every day as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for this presentation, almost a success story.
Yes,
we are looking for yesterday. some questions.
Hi, Ivan Gigon from IMI. You talk about monitoring, but I believe you develop a decision tool for the management of the aquifer. So is it the tool based on the modeling of the aquifer, or there is other thing and that you integrate inside? And many are thinking that did you integrate flooding prevention in your decision tool as well?
Yes, I developed a model to know how much I can leave in volume for the 2 weeks and how the ground level will be. Yes, I developed a very simple model, and I hope to develop a very better model with the new data from the flow meters.
Other question? Yes.
Thank you for your presentation. I'm Richard Brisson from EMI. You mentioned acceptability and the importance of consultation with the farmers. Can you maybe just give a few words on how this has been made and how farmers were involved and accepted that that work?
Yes, we have. In summer, we have weekly or every 2 weeks meeting with farmers. Farmers are have associations, and we have some people who come every week or every 2 weeks, and we have to convince them. And our expertise is real, and they trust in us, and the trust is very important to work with them. Yes, there is some fight, there is some very hard discussion, but the principle of these meetings, it's we don't vote. We have to be okay with the decision, all of them. Perhaps sometimes I am late in at home, it's very long discussion, but we progress.
Another one, it will be the last one.
Thank you. Alan Clark, NHC from Canada. Are farmers paying for water, and how are they billing?
Yes, the farmer pays for water. The system is very expensive because the farmers pay half of the price is for investment. The other half price is for maintenance and management. The management, all the management, with monitoring, is about 2% of the whole price. The price is depend of a lot of things, but it's about 10 cents per cube meter for water access. It's very expensive.
Okay. So thank you very much, and we'll move to the another paper about Oasis by Farida Amishi.
Good morning, everyone. I will try to speak English, but if it's not very clear, maybe we will translate.
It will be clear.
So my name is Farida Amishi. I'm a PhD student in CIRAD. In the continuity of the discussion of yesterday, I would like to introduce an original, maybe success story about a region in Algeria. This area is characterized by a strong dynamic that can be observed with the territorial extension. This extension pushes back the agricultural frontiers, therefore a new territory are formed. So this area is named Lagarus, It's located in Biskra in Algeria. It's 400 far from Algiers. And this agriculture is in the Sahara context by an arid climate. The irrigation is exclusively based on the groundwater. Another characteristic of this area is a strong labor migration from another areas in the country and became a new front pioneer. So traditionally in this area, we produce the palm trees we cultivate palm trees for producing dates. And in the past decades, the greenhouses were introduced to produce horticulture crop, tomato, pepper, and chili pepper. So farmers are producing horticulture crop at first. So the step before is to convert their farm holding to the palm trees. Now I will talk about the current situation in Larousse. You can see in this map that we can divide the area on the Larousse in three areas. We have the first one that is here. Here we produce palm date, only palm date, and when we are in this area, we combine between the palm date and the greenhouses. And here in the new areas, we have only greenhouses. So the farm holdings which are in this area, they will transform and become a palm trees in the future. Colonization of the space is made with a gradient. Je bascule peut-être vers le français.
Non.
So the state for to regulate the access of groundwater, the state limit the authorization of drill permission. We have in Larousse 200 tube wells permitted in 2011. In our work, we have identified 1,500 tube wells. So there is not a real coordination between the permitted tube well and the reality when we are in field. The arrangements to access to the groundwater are different, are various. And the arrangement for the use également. Donc, the farmers can access to the groundwater. It depends of the social network. In this map, we have the tube wells. In our sample, we found 6,700 of tube wells that are individual. It means improper property of Here we talk about investment of the farmers. But when we look to the use, the tube wells are used collectively out of the 50%. And when we look to the density between the different areas, we can see that it's different between each area. So in the first one, one tube well irrigates six hectares. In the second one, the same tube well irrigates 9 hectares. And in the new areas, one tube wells irrigate 17 hectares. So to accompany this extension, we highlight the role of infrastructure to anime the agriculture dynamic. Those infrastructures are electricity and roads. So we focus to the impact of electricity on this area. Here we can see the network electricity in Larousse. So we can see that it's covered by the electricity. We have took the data of the computer of the tube wells, and we found that there is in Larousse 1,320 tube wells. So we are very far from the 200 tube well authorized. So for the quest of new territories in this area, we have to combine the water, the land, and the infrastructure. And in each front, we have finally the public actors who intervene. And the social society, which are farmers or users or only lazies, for example. So when we look at the three maps and we combine the three maps, we can see that there is a link between the three fronts. When we are in the second area, we have electricity, we have routes, we have market, we have village, and the farm holding are stable. There is no changement for in the future, and the farmers make their tube well. In the opposite, when we go to the new frontiers where we are going in the future, there is no infrastructure at now. There is less tube wells, but we can expect that those new area will link with the old areas. So here, for example, we can find the new perimeter of aesthetic perimeter. Je peux passer en français? Non. In the beginning of the new perimeter irrigation, the state a introduit l'électricité. introduced electricity and a new tube wells. So the farmers, it was the déclic for the farmers to come in this area. It was the first factor because before that it was only pasture land. The farmers didn't expect that there is water in this area. So there is impulsion, state of state to develop the agriculture. Okay. So, in the conclusion of that, the pioneer areas are the result of the three alliance: water, land, and infrastructure. During the special temporal quest for new territories, a front may precede the other. It can be promoted either by state ambition or through local initiative. So the collective action, as that we observed in Larousse, can be the beginning of a governance mechanism in the case where a factor can slow the dynamic or the impact there is limit of socio-economic or environmental impact. So I thank you for your attention.
Okay, so there are two questions at least, one here and the other a little further.
Yes, I'm François Moll from IRD. My question is about the number of wells that were permitted, to 200. And then the government is giving the energy. They could control through the delivery of energy. So, that's a question of what's the reality of this number of 200?
Je peux répondre en français. Mais justement, c'est qu'il n'y a aucun... Ah non! There is not link between the direction of hydraulic and the fournisseur d'énergie. And when we have to get counter, there is not special indication for autorisation or non.
Okay, the other one, and the last one here.
Thank you. Mr. Guy Mohamed from Inner Tunisia. Three factors are important to develop this irrigated agriculture land: water, infrastructure, and the farmer by himself, land, which means. One factor is the land. Land is existing in, there is a lot of Saharan land, and everybody can work. Second factor is infrastructure, so which depends on the state. The third one is water. Water in the Sahara is non-renewable water. I'm asking what's happening to the groundwater, especially for the drawdown, and what will be the future of this land, and how it is correlated with its groundwater that is I'm transboundary regions. So how it is related to the part that should be uptaken by one state?
We had the same question in my PhD. I tried in another subject to quantify the use of this agriculture. We have already estimate the extraction of volume extraction. It's about 48 million de mètres cubes. 48 million de mètres cubes par an. Million of, but we didn't have compared with the stockage and how can we use this this aquifer? C'est-à-dire qu'on n'a pas encore comparé avec la structure de l'aquifer.
Okay, maybe the last question here. No, just the last one. You had a question, or you prefer to leave your echo?
Alvar Closes from EMI Egypt. So I have just one clarification. You said there's 200 wells, but then you said 1,300 wells electric, but then you said there's like 15,000 or like. So the rest are diesel, right?
Are on diesel, yes.
And it's linked to the question also. The second question quickly is: so there has been an impact, even though you haven't measured, from the new lands on the wells from the old lands, from the palm trees in the center, and has there been like a retreat of irrigated land in the old areas because of the impact of the new areas, or you have seen that the irrigated surface in the old lands has been maintained, or not?
En fait, quand when we are in the first area where there is palm trees. The farm holdings are stable, and often we can find heritage, we can find small farm trees, and each farmer make her his own farm tube well. Par contre, on n'a pas encore exploité.
Okay, maybe it's almost 12 o'clock, so we thank you very much.
Thank you,
and
sorry.
For your efforts to speak in English.
I will improve my English for next time.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And we'll go to the move to the last speaker. It will not be Frédéric Rancel as scheduled, but Thierry Reuf. Please, Thierry, be respect your time slot, you know, because we just have 30 minutes, and so you have 15 minutes for your presentation, and then we'll move directly to some kind of final discussion.
Thank you very much. I will present a research done by two teams, a team of sociologists from the University of Agadir, with Mahmed Madan, professor, and the team of social water management of Montpellier with Frédéric Rossel and myself, and with the work of students in a collective research. And the context of the Gerdan scheme will be presented, the history of the successive schemes, the characteristic of the new project, effect of the new way or think about water management, and collateral action of the state for small farmers. The context of Gerdan is in the Source Valley, in the source of Morocco. It's a place where there is a lot of schemes from different times, from different models. It's a kind of laboratory for the world problems of water management for different kind of purpose. In this case of Gerdan, the main characteristic is the development of orange tree production with big producers around the city of Sept Gerdan. This city this kind of device in the South Valley is very complex, because in some place you have a surface water management, in other place groundwater management, in other place combined systems, and in some place you have state authority to manage water, in some place communities, farmers communities, and in other place individual big farmers. In the case of Gerdan, individual big farmers are the main users of the water in the center of the map. What happened? Ah. C'est dans l'autre sens. Yes. Okay, the garden situation is well known in Morocco also because of the use of the water table and with the over-exploitation of the groundwater. So we are inside this territory of groundwater, and we are also in a place where the river South is crossing all the place. And it's well known by the construction of very deep wells. We see the wells done by men with simple tools for 200 meters deep. Yeah. So the world record, I think. So this the documentation on the overexploitation is well known. There is a deficit of water for the water table, about 300 million cubic meter. And this old overexploitation is still going, and water is now around 100 meters below the surface, and the wells until 200 meters below the surface. So to resolve the crisis of water and the crisis of orange tree production, the state decided to change the pattern of using the South River and build a specific dam to give this volume of 50 million of cubic meter to the scheme of Gerdan project. And the very well-known South situation of Gerdan is also in the experimentation of a new way to manage water with a delegation of water distribution to a private society. So in this context, we want to see in the fields what happened inside the limits of the Gerdan project and around Gerdan project too, because of the linkage between people, land, and water. We defined this different situations of schemes, and in the red part you have the part where water from the Gerdan project is coming specifically to this zone. The work we done is a work of field observation and field inquiries or interviews from all kind of actors, farmers, entrepreneurs, and capitalists, users or model. And first, we discovered that this scheme has a very old history. We are speaking about a new way to manage water, but we discovered that there was an old scheme of surface water management through big canals, and you can see now the kind of archaeology of this modern device done 25 years ago, and this device allow the use the water of the river to recharge the water table and to allow people to do their individual farms. There was also a history of old management of surface canals, of Retara canals, in this place. I have no time to develop a lot, but in the Gerdan situation, there is still a village with this kind of devices. And near this old device, there is this development of big orange tree farm. The race for land and water control begin at the time of the protectorate, but go on with independence, and in the beginning of the 80s, geographer Pope gave us a vision of this conquest of land and water resource through the exploitation of the groundwater in grain. The change of the distribution came with the epopee of big dams done by the Moroccan state, and finally the river did not give surface water to the old canals. And the action of the state has, was to build a new scheme with such devices, how it was in the 90s and how it is nowadays, abandoned but used by some people to adapt to the water scarcity and to the fact that water is now in the surface now. This device still exists, and there is some people using water with the gravitary techniques, as you see. So the new project of Gerdan is to change the pattern and to give half of the water demand to the palm, to the orange tree producers, with the transfer of the water through a new tube and then ramification and giving water through gates and with a specific programmation, computerized, very high technology for the final users. But there are conditions for the final users. You have to have at least 10 hectares to have the right to enter in the system of the private distribution. In fact, the project is giving water to individuals to without a collective intermediation. It's you are only client of the new society, Amensus, and you need to combine this water by at a high price with the water of the groundwater. So, in fact, the new water is not enough for the people, and they go on in the ways to catch water from underground. The Simon Bonnet showed us in this study the discontinuity of the territory. In green, you see the area with contract with the private society Amensus, and in red, the people with now no contract. Okay. So this project has been done with a purpose, a unique purpose, is save the orange tree as a strategic purpose for, from the state and from Morocco policy. But we see in the field that the condition of surface and the condition of production are not exactly the reality of the countryside of the systems. There is a lot of units of production changing their pattern, or going back or going to crop systems, annual crop systems. And in this case, they have no right to the new water. So the transformation of the agriculture is still a new demand for water. And there is also a lot of greenhouses, like we see in Algeria, and including breeding systems who ask for water for forage and for animals. So the situation of the project is now a situation with new water demands outside the new scheme and outside the new governance. Interesting is to see the reaction of the state for the small communities organized in water users associations in 20 years at least, when they do the concrete scheme that I showed before. And in these communities, the association now are object of a new policy of transforming the scheme with this kind of device adapted but non informal to a project of drip irrigation with a collective organization according to the former water user association. And there is a lot of subsidized 100% to change the technique of the small farmers and to push them for this kind of device at the land level with a coordination and with measurement of the water consumption, but with a lot of complexity of the reaction of the farmers. For example, in this case, the counter is not, we cannot show because to protect the work of the water users association leaders, you cannot see what is your own conception. I have no time. But the way to share water in these communities is still an old way of list of users' right to open the gates or the tubes and consign and share the cost of the people, not the cost of the scheme. Well, to conclude, we have a very complex future in this zone of Gerdan, with many problems in water management, consequence on water issue, on agricultural issue, on how to find new models to have incomes, and the orange tree production is in a very high crisis now. So for new generation, we propose to maintain some element of the countryside, element of the history of this countryside, like olive trees plantation, because the risk is this one, no agriculture and no water. How to connect surface and groundwater in the old times, the canals, as I said before at the beginning, yes, we have this connection, we have recharge of the water. Now we have no recharge of the water, and the story goes on, because some months after our study, we see that the system is going on in looking at 200 meters more water for the farmers' communities with a state agreement, agreement or laissez-faire, I don't know. I think in English we say laissez-faire.
I think so.
Yeah, okay. So, one example, another. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So, I suggest that, we have 15 minutes for a brief discussion, as it's very, very brief, and as we had the new elements today compared to what was said yesterday. I suggest that those of you who would like to say something, just say a few keywords or key sentences which could be presented to the plenary session of tomorrow. So is there any people who would like to react to either to the presentation of yesterday or to the presentation of today, some of one being quite new about, the potential of groundwater, for instance, to meet the demand of an increasing population, demographic problem, or the question linked with the possibility of having some success stories or other questions linked to, for instance, with this question of different type of farmers. Up to now, we are considering the farmer as a group which was quite homogeneous, and it appeared that it was not so homogeneous. It was said a little yesterday about the fact that poor farmers were really marginalized by the use of groundwater. So is there any thinking and any key issues, key point that you would like to put on the table? No reaction.
It's free.
I'm sure that someone must have asked something, you know, but you're just making up your mind, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, I'll start off. Alan Clark from NHC Canada. Some of the work that we're doing in Asia is very much trying to integrate large public canal schemes together with historic development of private sector groundwater. Does the panel or anybody here think that there might be a way forward to efficiently integrate electric or efficient groundwater with a public scheme? It's a way that forward we envisage in parts of India and Bangladesh. Some people might say it's a way backward as a public sector gets involved in groundwater control and pumping. But that's a major issue which I'm facing at the moment. Thank you.
Okay. Other reaction about other part of the world? No, it's the same part, I assume. Yeah.
In fact, when we are pumping groundwater, it is...
Can you present yourself?
Yeah. Myself, I'm K.Y. Reddy from India.
Yeah.
Okay. When we are trying to explore groundwater, it is expensive because we have to invest on pumping systems and energy, all that. So in our country, in some states, the policies are coming like that. Whenever you pump groundwater, the farmer should link with the micro irrigation in order to improve the efficiency of water use. The Gujarat government has done something like that. Even in our state of Andhra Pradesh, we are encouraging farmers to go for micro irrigation systems to get more out of your groundwater for the efficiency point of view. Okay, this probably will help in improving the efficiency.
Okay. So, okay, this is the link between two sessions, by the way. Okay. Yeah.
I think my name is Evje Arnouts from Leibniz Institute of Agriculture Development in Germany. I think... we saw from most of the presentations that groundwater drawdown is continuing despite regulations or policies on paper. And also Marcel Cooper in his presentation yesterday, he said that actually there is an interest of all bodies, like both the water users and the government, to continue drawing down the groundwater. And my question would really be, to what extent do we want regulations which bite because it hurts?
Yeah. It's a question to whom?
No, it's I think it's not a question with the answer, but it's something that we might want to consider also more in detail, like what are the social economic effects when we want to protect the environment, under what conditions?
Can we say that this should be considered as a theme or as a subject for future ICID thinking or a working group, something like that? Yeah. Okay. Other suggestion? Yes. Two in front. Well, obviously, IMI is very active.
Yes, IMI again, Marichal Buisson from IMI. Yeah, it's more a remark and maybe an area for future thinking and research. I think that we have not discussed a lot yesterday and today about the groundwater market. And that's maybe something which will be interesting to discuss, because simply when we think about the regulation, we imagine a tube well owner, and we imagine an homogeneous group of farmers, and most probably we need to think about something more. heterogeneous and wonder how different type of farmer benefit from the groundwater access, if they are owner or they are buyer of water, etc.
Yes, it's also like a general reflection, trying to bring the two sessions from yesterday and today. Sorry, Alvar Closes from IMI Egypt. One sort of underlying issue that came up yesterday and was also like a point that was brought to the, you know, to the panel and to the session was thinking about governance of groundwater. It's like who gets what, when, and how, and why. Kind of, I think if we can answer those questions regarding groundwater, I think we would have a fairly clear understanding of what the governance structure is around groundwater. And the underlying issue that came up yesterday, as I said, and also is also underlying the different presentations but hasn't been really untangled, is who gets what amount of groundwater. And this has been seen, or but not really tackled in the presentation about oases. There's an issue of like access to land by whom, who has access to what kind of land, who is allowing that access to the land for pumping groundwater. This is also an issue that came up, or I'm assuming is underlying the story of El Gerdan and also in Sousse and the Contrat de Nappe that was presented as well. So I just want to reemphasize this point that was brought up by my colleague Karen yesterday, and we really have to keep this in mind when we think about and research on groundwater governance issues.
Okay, thank you for this. So some other questions, issues to be.
Bouab Delawi from Morocco. Yeah, I think in the same way, I have a question about regulation, reinforcement, and responsibility versus sustainability. And it doesn't sufficient to link production to market only, but also there is equity to look at. And the system are not equal. When we compare a WAZ area and conventional watershed region, so we have to make a difference, strengthen responsibility. Maybe responsibility is a big word or nothing, because when you open production for every one have the mean, money, land, and so on. But maybe, we can introduce something not correctly, maybe politically correct. We have to orient, but who are we? Is it international regulation? It is ICD recommendation? So we can go on, but there is some question.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We know who we are, but the problem is who is entitled to take a decision, right? That's okay. We have very good, very very good intervention up to now. So maybe some other one. It will be fantastic. So, no other action? Marcel, do you have something to say, or you think that it's...
I just wanted to react to what you said about the groundwater markets. I think there's many different ways of getting access to water. For example, in North Africa, there's not so much things like water markets. It's something that is linked to the access to land, for example. If you get access to land, you also get access to water. So you can also look at these type of arrangements to obtain access to water. And the difficulty of these type of water markets is that they are informal and that they are very difficult to catch. So you really have to do a lot of work to access this. But these mechanisms are very, very important, especially for small-scale farming, I think.
Other reactions? Yes, over there.
It's our closest from Amy. It's kind of maybe I don't know if it's a good way to finish this, but it's based on what Marcel said. It's like there's a light at the end of the tunnel kind of thing, which is a reflection that comes out of our report and our work that we're doing in the MENA region. We have seen, as Marcel says, there's a lot of informal arrangements that are being developed by users themselves at a very, very local scale that are kind of extremely interesting and should maybe be explored and developed further. These are, as we said, informal, so like easy, difficult to track, but they users themselves are organized when there's lack of access to like surface water, so they a lot of them drill in common like shared or like collective wells so that they can access groundwater. So there's a very interesting pool of experiences, social capital, etc., that is driving groundwater abstraction. That doesn't mean that it's sustainable or not. That's another question. But there is indeed an extremely interesting pool of cases that we can learn from, and that is combining also the different approaches that we've had before, like coming from the state regulation, but also bringing the user perspective, the equity aspect into it, is that those arrangements are traditionally, as Thierry Ruff said, the jetaras, etc. But right now there are very interesting cases that are being developed and I believe should also be further put forward.
Okay, if there are no questions, if there is no other question, we may end this. Yeah. Oh, okay, there is another one.
One more there.
Okay.
Just a light question. I just want to react to what the German lady said.
Can you about present
the, who are?
I'm sorry, I'm Sadek Shouk. I work at ERD in Tunisia. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to react to what the German lady said about the overexploitation, in which extent we want it to stop, because I also work in Tunisia along the Ministry of Agriculture, where we can see that only one department really wants or really acts toward these actions. And so can we consider that overexploitation is really a problem? Because there we have many reflections about can we fix, I don't know how to say it in English, but des seuils, des paliers. This word of overexploitation. For instance, we say, okay, for 50 years now, we're going to overexploit the water table, etc. And so I was just wondering if we can insert this idea into the public policies. Just to, is it clear?
Okay. Another, if somebody would react to this.
Olivier,
see. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Here on and.
Instead, I have already asked the question. Do you think to use the conjunctive use of the groundwater with the surface water together where the wetland is very near? Because excessive withdrawal of the groundwater in sometimes made a declination of the groundwater table, which makes some problem in the area. Some arsenic problem, other contamination of the water. Also, the scarcity of the groundwater declaration creates a problem in the area, drawdown. So, do you have a think about the conjunctive use of the surface water groundwater together where the wetland is very close to the groundwater table? That should be divided in the ICD. Thank you very much.
Okay. Maybe to, is it your reaction to the.
Short time.
Yeah, it's a quick reaction to this idea of thresholds and considering, Alvar Closes from EMI. It's considering the fact that in Texas, it's the only experience that I know a bit better, but Texas have decided to do this and to decide in 50 years we will abstract a certain amount of groundwater. And this amount is defined by the users themselves. It's a very specific like administrative governance structure. But and because of the weight of the users, they have decided that they're just going to pump it out, no matter what. And the state doesn't have enough power right now to counteract that. So they had to go with it, and they have defined very specific sort of targets. For in 50 years, we'll have 50% of the accumulated resource, which is actually zero because they're already at 50% of the economically accessible groundwater right now. So in 50 years, it'll be all gone, and no one will be able to pump anymore. This is a choice that the users in Texas have decided, and it's linked to a very specific culture and history of like private rights, which are adamant to everything else. So it's been tried. It's controversial, and you know, we can decide whether it's the right way to do it or not. But it's been done, or it's being done.
Okay.
Olivier, you want to react or?
No, it's okay.
Any other question? Well, if there is no question, I think we have enough material for this, for a very short summary of what has been said here, and to open new thinking, to develop new subject for ICID. And I thank everybody for your participation to this session, and I wish you a fruitful discussion during lunchtime. Oh, Thierry.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Announcement?
Announcement.